This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Was it a case of thin mountain air or bad Yu Darvish when the Cubs immediately surrendered a 4-0 lead in the third inning? And what did you think of Yu overall?
I thought Yu overall was pretty good. Overall, I thought that giving away that lead was really that decided the game. I mean, you really can't do that. You've got to have a better. You got to have a better half inning when you get a 4-0 lead, and that really was the definition of what went wrong. But when you look at the numbers, you know, David, you said it earlier, we were praising John Lester for sticking with it and how tough he was and when he had a bad first inning. And here's Yu Darvish. He gets a 4-0 lead and immediately gives it back, and so we're going to tear into Yu. And it was not a great performance on his part overall because of the fact that they led 4-0 and he had a little bit to work with and instead just got bombed. And, you know, I get it. It's he ended up doing a decent job on the night. But other than that, that half inning, I mean, that again, you let him right back in the game and you gave him hope and you kind of cost your team. So it's hard to praise him for that outing. And I think ultimately he could have used more help and certainly could have used the bullpen could have done better, but it's on you.
He was frustrated, and I think that that's actually you don't want to, like, we parse everything that he says, but yeah. I think that when he sounds as frustrated as he was afterward, you're like, oh boy, at least he understands that that wasn't good enough, and I don't think it was. The difference between John Lester's numbers on Saturday night and Yu Darvish's on Monday, but they both gave up 4 runs in 6 innings, was that John Lester has earned the benefit of the doubt from Chicago, from the Cubs, from the league, and Yu Darvish is still, you know, I think he maybe is flirting with Major League history here with 8 straight non-decisions, no decisions, and so he is a guy that needs to get, you know, on a roll. He looked good at times last night. His control was better in terms of walking people. He looked in command. He still gave up those 2 home runs, which you wonder about the pitch selection to Arenado. You wonder about the decision to throw to him. Caratini was behind the plate last night. I thought that was interesting because it wasn't Wilson Contreras this time. But it is strange that overall he continues to have this one thing that happens every start that kind of gets in the way. So it wasn't the mountain air. It was more Darvish, and they can't blow a lead. And you said that next time he's going to be 120% committed to not letting that happen. So we'll hold him to that. So overall, he was just sort of meh.
If you told me before the game, Yu Darvish will go 6 innings, give up 4 runs, and not walk any batters at Coors Field, I'll take that every time. It looked like it was going to be a recipe for a disaster. 14 of his 21 outs came via the fly ball, which obviously resulted in a few home runs. But as soon as he left, Mike Montgomery, he came in. He gave up a 486-foot bomb by
Good
Desmond.
Point. Longest one of the year, Joe.
Ooh, that was, yeah, even longer than Eloy Jimenez. You have to look to the offense. You had that third inning with 3 home runs, but outside of that third, you're at Coors Field. They had 0 extra base hits for the game. 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. Situational hitting, not the problem there. It's they didn't have the opportunities. You had 3 chances to drive guys in. You need to score more than 5 runs to win in Colorado.
Well, yeah, I mean, John Lester wasn't good, particularly against the Cardinals. It's just that the time and the situation in which you allow the runs, I think, is a big part of it. He gives up the runs immediately in that game on, what was it, Saturday or Sunday? I don't even remember at this point.
Saturday.
So he gives up the runs early. They all are. He gives up all those runs in the first inning, and you're playing at Wrigley Field, and you have the benefit of a great offense, particularly playing at home. The offense is much better for whatever reason. We'll get into their home road discrepancies a little bit later, but it's all about the offense. They scored 9 runs last night, then they're going to win that game. And Joe, I agree with you. You know, Yu Darvish wasn't excellent, and like I also said, it depends on when you allow those runs. Mully, to your point that you made earlier, was kind of a back-breaking, deflating thing to jump out to that huge lead early in the game and then just immediately give it back. I think that might have also had a little bit of a mental toll on the players, where it's like, okay, we did the work, and you kind of just negated all of that completely, and now we have to work twice as hard to get back into this thing. So overall, the line from Darvish doesn't look that bad. You know, you'll take it. But the situation and the time where he allowed the runs, I think, was the bad part. And I don't think it was the air or anything that's legal out there in Colorado. I'm not sure if the cowboy trip or what else is entailed with Joe and what he's doing there. But it was just, you know, your classic Yu Darvish start. Even if the line looks a little bit good in the box score, actually watching the game wasn't quite as smooth as you would have liked.
The other day, maybe it was Saturday, I forget which day it was, but
long
Friday?
Weekend.
No, but Lennon made the point about, Lennon talked about when guys get credited for a win or don't get credit for a win. You know, last night, Steve Cishek was credited for the loss. He shouldn't have gotten the loss. Yu Darvish should have gotten the loss. Mully, you're right. To your point, it's the timing of it. It looked like the Cubs were going to have a laugher, okay? 3 home runs in 3 official at-bats after there was a walk in between, right? All of a sudden, they're up 4. And you think you're cruising, okay? You think you're on absolute cruise control. And again, the last time the Rockies were in town and Yu Darvish pitched, he had a problem with who? With 2 outs?
Nolan Arenado.
And what was the game? I mean, Joe Maddon is on today at noon. Maybe he will be asked about the game plan. Tommy Hotovy will be on this show tomorrow, time TBD, because of the travel where they're at right now. It might be a little bit later than, maybe it'll be 8:40 instead of 8 o'clock. But I know we're going to ask Tommy Hotovy, what was the plan? Why are you not pitching around him? You already gave up a 2-run home run to Charlie Blackmon, okay? And then how in the world, they won by 1 run. How in the world did that guy steal third base? How does Daniel Murphy, who can barely move, classic DH, how did he steal third base? Oh, very frustrating night.
That's a general answer to a general question.
Why are the Cubs having issues winning on the road?
Boy, I wish I knew. I wish that the Cubs knew. I wish that they could do something about it. But the fact of the matter is, 13-17 on the road. This is a team that struggles away from home. Wrigley Field has been the friendly confines in every way. They're very dominant almost at home, 24-11. I don't know if they have these mental lapses. I don't know what it is, but it is last night. You could say, well, it's a product of being at Coors Field. I don't know. I think that sounds like an excuse. Why are the Cubs having issues winning on the road? It's a question that will persist, and you hope that it's not one that drags into October, and you're asking this either, you know, in the first or second round of the playoffs, because good teams, championship teams, they win on the road, and they do so. Either they go 500 or they don't have a losing record, and 13-17 is not acceptable for the Cubs on the road.
It was their fourth consecutive road loss, 3 of them by 1 run, and you look at it, David. They've lost what? They went 6-1 and they signed Craig Kimbrell when they got home. Woohoo! And everybody feeling like a million, and then. And they've now lost 7-9, and or what is it? No, 6-7 and 9-12 on the road of late. So it is really usually when you see that kind of inconsistency, it comes from a younger team where you learn first to win at home. And we know there's a carnival atmosphere, and the home field advantage is great for the Cubs. But usually young teams have to learn how to win on the road. And in this case, this is a veteran team. This is a team that has tons of fan support even on the road. There were a ton of people in Cubs gear at that game in Denver. And it's always, they're always well supported. So you can't go back to that. It is really confounding that they're not winning on the road to this level, and I believe they are—they have the worst road record of the four teams closest to a division lead.
Yep.
Or a half game out.
That's
now.
True.
That's kind of confounding. I gotta think it all comes down to the Western gear. No, I mean, listen. It just didn't make any sense. It doesn't make a ton of sense. They've got
Western gear didn't make sense.
More
or the winning on the road doesn't make sense.
Should do better on the road.
And maybe the Cub fans were there for David Bodie.
The strength. One of the strengths of this team, obviously, starting pitching, fifth best ERA in baseball. And part of this is they are so dominant at home. But the reason they have a poor record away from Clark and Addison is because of the starting pitching. Yu Darvish is the only guy that's better on the road. Yu Darvish. Look at some of these splits. Kyle Hendricks at home, a 1.65 ERA. On the road, 4.89. Quintana, sub-3 at home. On the road, it's over 5. Lester at home, 2.45. On the road, it's nearly 5. It's Jekyll and Hyde with the starting pitching so far this season. They are so great at Wrigley, but when they go on the road, some of these guys in numbers double.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Joe. I was looking at the splits myself. First, I looked at the offensive ones, and they're actually hitting better away from Wrigley, which I was astounded by. But then you look at the splits with the home and away of the ERA of the team, 3.03 at Wrigley, which is obviously fantastic, and then away bumps all the way up to 4.81. So I don't know if it's a comfort issue or if it's just, you know, obviously it's going to be easier to play at home. Every team does play better at home, but to see that drastic of a jump really shocked me in terms of the overall staff ERA. So that's pretty much the big issue there. And you look at some of the other teams leading their divisions, like you guys kind of alluded to there, they are all over 500 away from home. Then you look at the Cubs, they are 13-17 away from Wrigley Field. That's not particularly sustainable when you've got Milwaukee on your tail. Hell, Milwaukee's actually a half game ahead of the Cubs now after their loss last night.
First place Brewers, please.
The first place and the defending division champion Milwaukee Brewers, might I add as well.
Who have a winning record on the road.
That's right. They have a winning record at home. So do the Dodgers. So do the Braves. You know, home field is going to be very, very important, especially if the Cubs continue to struggle away from Wrigley like they have.
Yeah, this is absolutely maddening that they can't figure it out. And, you know, Mully, you made a great point. They've had fantastic road support. I was shocked last night when I saw all that Cubby blue.
It's so annoying watching the games and they're away. And
you're just jealous.
All these jackals in the
crowd.
You're
just jealous because there's more
the Cubbies.
There's more Cub fans. There's more Cub fans in an away game than there are Sox fans in a home game.
Can you imagine being in public and chanting "Let's go Cubbies" as an adult?
I can. I've done it.
He just called it Cubby blue instead of blue.
Well, it's a certain shade. Can go to the paint store and ask for that.
The Royal
blue. Cubs blue.
It's not Royal blue. That's the Kansas City Royals.
It's not Cubs blue?
Well, that's how they refer to it at the paint store.
Thank you, A-Rod.
At Ace. Ace depends is the place on what with paint the store. Hopeful Harvest folks. I blame Madden, of course. I'm going to blame Madden. When we had the erroneous report that Chris Bryant was not going to be in the game yesterday, Four-letter network sent out a bad tweet yesterday, and the Cub world shook. Okay, I was going to go nuts because there was the Cubs social media that showed John Lester and Chris Bryant walking out of Wrigley Field with their 10-gallon hats on and their sport coats and their John Lester get up, have fun cowboy day, and he was walking out of Wrigley just fine. So I was going to be really upset if Bryant wasn't going to be able to play after he was seen walking out of Wrigley Field on his way to a bus.
Had the horses in the back.
So you want Theo to ban theme trips now?
I didn't say that, but the answer the question, what I think could be wrong, is that the mind is focused on who can outdo who instead of focusing on hitting the opposing pitcher or shutting the opposing offense down. I mean, Joe had a great stat for us. I mean, those are great stats. Those mean something. Kyle Hendricks can't start every game on the road. Cole Hamels can't start every game at Wrigley Field. So
it's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question and obviously a ripe one.
What did you make of Odrysamer Despaña's first start with the White Sox? Did he earn a second? And what other options do the White Sox have?
I was really kind of amused by it. I mean, he seemed like such a junk ball pitcher, and he just seemed like he was just filled with
reaching
veteran
down
guile
in the bag of tricks.
Exactly,
and just seeing what's
exactly.
Left in there.
He's running out. You know, he's changing every kind of. He's just, you didn't know where he was going to pop up, what he was going to throw, or what. I mean,
like
look,
Gaylord Perry.
It ended up being fine. It ended up, you know, being pretty good. He gave you what you wanted from him, right? I mean, he probably lasted longer than you suspected. He didn't give up the big inning. He was constantly kind of battling his way out. I mean, it was, honest to God, it was amusing because it was sort of veteran bag of tricks, you know, kind of this, you know, little, I'm going to try a little magic over here, and I'm going to spit on this one. And
deception.
I mean, you have no idea what he was going to do, yeah. You know, and it was, I kind of got a chuckle from it, and it was weird. I mean, look, they didn't hit. You know, they didn't give him. A guy like that comes up, and I know Anibal Sanchez is used to be a good pitcher, but he hasn't been in a while, and he was kind of throwing a lot of junk too. So if you gave that guy some run support, maybe he'd have a chance. But
maybe.
He did okay. He did. I'm not touting it as the greatest start ever, but okay. I think when you brought him up and you put him in that spot, if someone told you that's what you were going to get out of him, right? He went, what, six innings and gave up three runs?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, hey, it's better than you.
Amusing is the right word. Satisfying, maybe not. I don't know that you can live with that because you have to. Look. Everyone had a college car, right? Everyone had a car that they had. I had a Reliant K car. I took back and forth to college. Every time I got into the car, I wanted it to start. I wanted to make sure it was a success if it started and it drove me from point A to point B, whether it was from home to campus or from the dorm to the football stadium, wherever it was. I was just relieved that it got me from point A to point B. It was a junk car, but it got me there. That's the way the White Sox fifth starter is. That's the way Despaña, what I think of when I think about what they're going to do. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're living. I don't know what this is. This is not a plan. This is hope. This is a wing and a prayer.
Buying time.
It was amusing, but buying time for what? What is the plan?
Dylan Covey and Dylan Cease.
Well, Dylan Covey's hurt. Dylan Cease is delayed. And I understand that they don't have pitchers to go to. They don't have a lot of options. What other options do the White Sox have? Prayer.
I agree with Rick Renteria. He did his job. I mean, it looks ugly when you see a big 12 up there, but you had six runs in the ninth. The bullpen gave up nine runs over three innings. A nice celebration for Adam Eaton. Did I miss the video tribute in his first game back on the South Side? Maybe I did. But I know the Nationals are below 500.
The leader in Drake, which is crazy enough at 14.
I know they're below 500, but the talent is still there. It looks like they're finally starting to turn it around a little bit. I would give him another shot, and he'll probably get shelled by the Yankees come Sunday.
Oh, gosh. And he's pitching against the Yankees on Sunday?
That would be a spot because you've got Banuelos and Nova lined up for the two-game Cubs series next week. But as far as the Cease conversation goes, you don't call Cease up because you need a starting pitcher. You call Cease up because he's ready for the next level. So that you don't want to make that move just because they need a starting pitcher right now. But I would give him another shot because look what else you're throwing out there.
You don't think Dylan Cease is ready?
I'm not saying that. I say you make that call when he's ready, and not because, oh, we need a starter right now. Let's just call him up.
Okay. Amusing.
Kevin, did you have a college car? Because I had a couple.
I didn't go to junky too. I didn't go to college. My hometown. My hometown doesn't have a university. Had 1,500 people. I needed a car to get to campus.
Wow, culture clash.
Go ahead and yell. Yeah.
Amusing is a good word for
the yelling. I'm sorry.
A little upset. Someone got a little defensive.
Okay.
I got to say.
I just killed for a college car.
Smoke and mirrors, whatever you want to call it, last night from Despaña. And he did technically register a quality start, technically. And the score line wasn't flattering because you did have a Thiago Vieira, Juan Minaya sort of situation there late in the game, which you'd always like to avoid. He's definitely going to get a second start. No question about it. I mean, who the hell else can you really throw out there? It's not like he fell flat on his face or embarrassed himself. Sure, at times he looks like he's about 50 years old. He's got about 12 different windups that he's going out there using. He doesn't particularly throw hard. This guy is like a caricature of like a journeyman, like old warhorse pitcher. So sure, if he's going to go out there and he's going to give you six innings, and keep you in the game. I mean, they lost last night because they got four hits. I mean, end of. And I hope Moncada's okay. It's a little startling that he came out of the game. But absolutely, send Espana back out there for round two. Let's see how... I mean, this is clearly finite. If he makes it to the All-Star break intact in this rotation, I'll be shocked. But you just got to ride your luck. You got to keep throwing him out there because you have so few options left.
Well, I mean, I think it's just that simple. What are the other options right now? I know there are other options ahead. And Rick Hahn talked about a guy that everybody wants to see. He admitted that maybe this is going to happen this year. Okay? Maybe, Dylan Cease might happen this year. They're not going to rush him. But I could see Dylan's... it sounded like Dylan Cease after the All-Star break, maybe. That would be a... Maybe mark your calendar, but for the next start, absolutely you have to do it again. But they didn't lose because of Despaña; they lost because of four hits in the bullpen.
Don't ask me about that.
What is the biggest story of Game 5 of the NBA Finals? The Warriors living to play another day, or Kevin Durant's apparent Achilles injury? Can Golden State survive to force a Game 7 Thursday night? Is Durant more or less likely to return now that he's seriously injured? And was his decision to play heroic or stupid?
Well, a lot there. I don't know that you can pick one or the other. I don't know that there's an answer there that's definitive. I think it's the collective drama of a superstar and a defending championship team and how that all goes into play, and he's ready to walk. There's just so much collective drama there. It is a terrific reality television. And you felt a vulnerability, and you saw a vulnerability in Kevin Durant that really resonated with a lot of people. I do think you should beware the Warriors. They have a second chance here. They have new life, and they were down six with 3 minutes to go, away from home, and they found a way, and they might still find a way. They responded to Kevin Durant being out before in the playoffs, and they weren't playing the Raptors, and it wasn't the NBA Finals, but I would be very cautious in counting them out. As far as Durant being heroic or stupid, I would hesitate for anyone to be too critical of calling him stupid. That's a strong word. And I think that you have to understand what's going on here. Again, as we talked about at the beginning, Molly, this wasn't just an ordinary player trying to talk his way into a game because he wanted to play and he wanted to be sort of the macho guy. This was a superstar who wanted to try to alter his legacy in the NBA Finals. Those were some powerful forces in play here. You tell him no. I mean, you tell Kevin Durant no. The fact that he was on the court was his responsibility and largely his choice. Can you save a player from himself? Yeah, that's easy to say, harder to do. You saw the emotion. You saw everything that they had invested in this decision when you saw Bob Myers breaking down after the game. I thought that was sincere. I thought it was genuine. And I felt some empathy.
It's not fair.
I think it'll get mocked. It'll get sort of ridiculed. But I thought it was genuine. And it was unfortunate, but you couldn't look away from this. And Kevin Durant is – there's no way he's coming back. I mean, this is an Achilles injury.
No. The question is more or less likely to return to Golden State.
Oh, okay. I think that's possible because now – if you're the Knicks, if you're a team out there, you want damaged goods, and you don't know that you won't be getting damaged goods.
Yeah, if I'm the Knicks, I'd take damaged goods. If I were the Nets, I'd take damaged goods. If I was anyone in the league, I would take Kevin Durant and wait a year. But the bigger story, believe it or not, is Kevin Durant's injury, because that changes everything in the NBA for next season. Kevin Durant, everybody is waiting on Kevin Durant and his decision and where he's going to go, and everybody's been trying to read the tea leaves, and I just mentioned a couple of teams that are interested in him. And again, I think he may decide to wait and go back to Golden State, and those teams may decide to wait on him. I mean, Kevin Durant's the best player in the league. He really is, and I think he showed that. I do not believe personally that this had anything to do with his legacy. I think he wanted to help his team win. I don't think he wanted to do it to prove anything. The guy's been a finals MVP. I don't think he has anything to prove. I don't think this has anything to do. I think if you're a superstar player and you moved from one team to the next, the first time you win a title, you have justified that move. And I don't think he's looking at how people view him or anything else. I think when you're an NBA superstar, you live in a bubble, and I think he wanted to help his teammates win a world championship. I'm not saying he's completely oblivious to some of that talk, but I really don't think that came into play. I think he was probably aiming to return maybe the last game and now returns this game. It was probably something that he was planning on doing all along, and he was talking to his teammates about. They loved the guy. I don't buy half this stuff. I get it. There was, Steve Kerr said some stuff on a podcast in the offseason. Draymond was mad at him earlier in the year. That's because they thought they might lose him. That was more about wanting him to be fully committed. I think he proved that he's fully committed. But the bigger story isn't whether the Warriors will go on to win the NBA Finals. Certainly, they're a lot more likely to go on and win the NBA Finals than they would have been had they lost the NBA Finals last night. But I think it's still a big road to climb, and I think it's not going to be easy. And I think that if they get to a Game 7, here's a weird comment. If they can get through Thursday, they'll win the NBA title in Game 7. I think that they debunked this whole thing with home court and all that stuff. They've now won two games in Toronto and none at home in two chances. So I think that if they win at home.
So you think it's 2-for-1? You think if they win 6, it's over?
I think if they win 6, yeah, they're going to win 7. Because I think there'll be some tight sphincters, and I think there'll be some people. That crowd, every time they hit a three, that crowd seemed to just shut up. And it was not a part. This team is a very experienced team.
Squeaky bum time.
It was squeaky bum time.
I really wish that crowd would have shut up when Kevin Durant got injured.
Yeah, nice Canadians.
Yeah, I think that was a bad moment for everyone. But I think that even Toronto felt really bad, you know? I mean, that is... You know, there was a brotherhood of players in the NBA, and you don't want to see anybody go through that sort of thing. So it didn't surprise me that there was a lot of emotion about it. But I think the bigger story is the future of the NBA and all these teams that have been kind of gearing up and hoping to get Kevin Durant, and now it looks like he could remain in Golden State. Again, I don't know how he feels about the medical staff. They apparently assured him he couldn't get hurt, and he did, but it could mean that he sticks around.
And I agree, Mullen, and it's funny. We're sitting here in the NBA Finals waiting for a championship to be decided, and we're still looking ahead. That's just what happens with the conversation. The Kevin Durant injury, the bigger story here. This is something that might hang over Steve Kerr's for the rest of his coaching career, this call. I mean, he looked great. You saw the dancing before the game. I was expecting for us to talk about, wait, if he was good enough to dance, why couldn't he play in that last game? 11 points in the first 12 minutes. But how do you go from a guy that's barely practicing, if at all, maybe what, one practice, to unlimited?
And Joe, unlimited minutes. That was the first basketball move he made. He had been playing within himself, right, coming down, taking threes. You know, he blocked a shot, and he got knocked down. But really, that was the first time where he took the ball and was about to drive.
So, Joe, you think that Steve Kerr should have told him no?
No, it's just something that he's going to be questioned forever. Do we ever see guys come back from injuries like this, and then you're jumped into the middle of the NBA Finals, and now you're not even resting him? What, he sat like 2 minutes out of the first 14? I just thought that was a little crazy. But it's easy to say after the fact that we have the results of what happened. Last game at Oracle ever. Yeah, they've got a shot at winning this and forcing this out to 7 games, 100%. And if they do, I agree, Mully, that they're going to end up winning this series. So the big question in the offseason, now is he more likely to just opt in, Or is there going to be another team willing to pay him to sit on the sideline? I think there's going to be another team willing to jump in. All these names that we keep hearing, teams trying to get involved in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. Yeah, right, we'll get to that in a second. Kevin Durant cares a lot about his perception. He does. And I think it was heroic, and I think that's part of the reason that he was out there. He wanted to shut people up.
Yeah, I think anybody criticizing Durant for playing last night is just either, you know, way off the deep end in terms of, you know, just hate for him or disdain or whatever it is, because, you know, sometimes a guy will go out there injured and be like, oh, wow, what a gutsy, brave performance. And now people are saying, oh, what an idiot for playing last night. I mean, he's trying to, you know, be there for his team. And he did play extremely well when he was in there. So I don't criticize him at all for that. I applaud him for trying to go out there. I think overall what I took away from the game was a fantastic game, by the way. I think experience sometimes can be a little bit overblown. But last night you saw the experience of the Warriors, of Steph and Klay hitting huge shots late in that game. Draymond had some big shots late in that game. And outside of Kawhi Leonard for Toronto, he's the only one that's been there on that stage before. So Golden State was able to weather the storm when Kawhi came up with some huge shots late in that game. The rest of the shots weren't falling. The defense was a lot better for the Warriors. And I'm with you guys. I think if they win Game 6, they're going to win Game 7.
I'm all about the right now. So the Warriors living to play another day for me is a bigger story right now than Kevin Durant's Achilles injury. It sounds like Kevin Durant wanted to play. And if he wanted to play and the medical team checked him off, then you can't second guess this one. I mean, it's too easy. It's right there. It's a 2-foot putt to second guess it. But it is what it is, and we have to move on.
I think the coach that will never live it down might be Nick Nurse.
Exactly.
Again, if they lose. Yes.
I think the timeout might go down as the biggest moment of Game 5 or this entire series. And now, because of this, I think Durant is more likely to stick around the Warriors. I really do, especially if the Warriors end up winning this thing. There's kind of seems like a brotherhood going on there. So this makes me think that Durant might be likely to stick around at least one more year with the Warriors.
That's a hard question to ask.
It's a pretty important question to answer, though.
This segment brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion. Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Reports say that the Bulls could be part of a three-team deal to help facilitate a trade of Anthony Davis to either the Knicks, Lakers, or Celtics. Is Lonzo Ball worth getting involved? And if Davis is available via trade, should the Bulls at least ask what the price is, even if it's potentially just for 1 year?
Oh, boy. You know, I would not be thrilled if the Bulls got Lonzo Ball here. That doesn't do a hell of a lot for me. Not necessarily him, but what comes with him. just the whole series of problems and headaches that that the family would bring. And I mean,
the big ball away.
Yeah. I mean, there's part of me that would be amused by that.
But Mondays at 8.
How could they?
We're talking about big baller brand.
Yeah, I don't think that would be a lot of fun to witness him calling out Michael Jordan or whatever it is that he does. It doesn't do a lot for me. Lonzo can't play very well. He can't hit a jumper for his life. He might have if Dad spent less time talking and more time teaching him how to shoot, maybe that would have worked.
Tell Donald Trump to have a great Thanksgiving, because Big Baller is.
Yeah, that doesn't do much for me. I mean, listen, whenever there's an opportunity, you got to examine everything. But there are various reports about different players.
Yeah.
That's taking someone's garbage off their hands.
It is.
For a seventh pick. Come on.
Why? You know, what's the purpose? What's the driving force? Look, it's unfortunate that you can't evaluate Lonzo Ball, the player, without factoring in what comes with his dad. But that's not I would hope that the Bulls find another way to celebrate Father's Day than inviting that guy into town.
He's not a good enough player.
He's not good enough to justify it. Right. You know, he's not a good enough player to justify the baggage. He was the number 2 overall pick, but I think that was a reach. So I wouldn't let the Lakers off the hook and get kind of taking their mistakes off their hands. I think the Bulls can just focus on the number 7 pick. There's really no realistic reason to believe that they could pick up the phone and call the Pelicans and talk David Griffin into you know, sending them Anthony Davis for whatever they want to give in return, even for the one-year rental, the Kawhi Leonard trial. The Bulls aren't going to compete for the NBA Finals next year, even with Anthony Davis. So I think that's a discussion that's sort of hypothetical. It's fun to consider, but it's a pipe dream. So I don't know that I would do anything if I were the Bulls except for focus on the best player available at number seven.
After what we've seen out of 2 years with Lonzo Ball, and I know he hasn't been surrounded with much with the Lakers, but I would prefer the Bulls attack the vacancy they have a point guard via the draft.
Welcome to Big Baller Zone.
Instead of bringing in Lonzo Ball, just looking at him as the player. Now, Anthony Davis, that's a different conversation. We rip the Bulls constantly for failed efforts in free agency. We rip the Bulls for no efforts in free agency, like right now. They've made that announcement that they don't even have a max slot available. If Anthony Davis is on the table in any way, even if it's for 1 year, I consider that, because that's the biggest problem right now. They don't have a superstar, and it doesn't look like they have any way of landing a superstar.
I would also consider Anthony Davis, even if it was just for 1 year.
Oh,
I was watching the game last night, and I just in my mind, I was thinking, what if you put Kawhi Leonard on the Bulls roster right now? How deep could he take them into the playoffs? It's just something to consider when you add a top five, top ten guy like that to a all right roster. You know, it could definitely take you to the NBA Finals, as we've seen with Toronto potentially. As far as Lonzo Ball, you guys are all way off base here. I am so for Lonzo Ball in Chicago. LaVar, LaMelo, LiAngelo, Tangerino, all the rest of them can all come here and hang out. If you guys don't want to be big ballers, that's on you. This kid's 21 years old, 6'6". He can rebound. He can play defense. He's a great passer. He's just going to get better and better. He can develop a jump shot over time. I get why some people might be hesitant.
It's Chris Dunn.
He is so much better than Chris Dunn at pretty much everything. He's taller, and his dad is way more hilarious. listen, I'm all in on Lonzo here in Chicago. I would be so into that move.
I'm only in on Lonzo because of the drama, okay, for the purposes of the show, for the fun that we would have, for the drops, for the potential interviews, for the potential weekly hit with the father.
We tried to get him on once.
Yeah, that didn't work out. Maybe that was a good thing. I do find the Anthony Davis thing interesting, especially if, let's say, Kawhi leaves the Raptors, everybody stays west. All the big free agents stay west. If you could trade, meaning the Bulls, could trade for Anthony Davis, who knows what happens? Now the question is, what's the package? What would it take? And would it deplete the team so badly that you would have no shot at really competing next year and you'd still be on a future lottery pick? So it's interesting to kick around and talk about, but we'll have to wait and see.
All righty, 312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. You're listening to Mully and Haw on the Score.